content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from The Teen Magazine. Our first article is titled, A Talk on Her Self-Exploration. Lottie Moss is a fashion model and OnlyFans creator from the United Kingdom. Growing up amidst the media fixation on her as Kate Moss's little sister, Lottie is no stranger to public attention, positive or negative. Her alluring looks, witty humor, and outspoken mind have earned her a mass attraction on Instagram with 400,000 followers. As a successful model, breaking her first cover on Vogue in 2016, the 23-year-old star has a lot on her mind. The Teen Magazine had a chance to chat with Lottie about her journey and encounters in the fashion industry and the ever-popular 10 quick cue round for you to better get to know her. Family and growing up. Despite many, many speculations that she would have grown up with immense pressure from both society and the family's own expectations, Lottie felt differently. I just grew up with my mom and dad, so I was very close to them, so I had a relaxed, normal upbringing, she answered frankly. People would assume it was crazy, but it wasn't. Lottie's favorite childhood memories include going to her mother's hometown in Norway, visiting her friends and relatives while enjoying the Christmas snow that adds a magical touch to the view. She reminisced, I have charming memories of skiing too. Career and stigma against sex workers. Lottie has been on the covers of all different kinds of magazines, from Vogue, Dazed, to Teen Vogue. However, she took her career another turn. She explained, I wanted to do something that felt a little more me. Lottie started her OnlyFans account this year, getting hundreds of thousands of views and attention from the public. She described her action of starting OnlyFans as empowerment for women, where they are celebrated. After being in the fashion world for her whole life, she also wants a different vision for the broader industry. I would love for them to start using more trans people in the fashion industry, Lottie voiced her thoughts. She explained that her trans friends have heard hollow words from the people in the industry, promising their support of the LGBTQ community. However, their campaigns, branding, and magazine speak differently. Lottie also spoke of her personal struggles. I have faced discrimination, but I also received the same when modeling. The fashion industry should be more inclusive of all genders, skin colors, sizes, and sexualities. There will always be someone out there trying to put you down, but you have to be strong and independent. For young adolescents who want to enter the fashion and entertainment industry, she only has one advice. Don't do it. Relationships and sexuality. Lottie realized she was bisexual when she was a kid. She recalled, I used to be at sleepovers with girls like, let's kiss. She was embarrassed when she was around girls, and after she slept with a guy at the age of 18, she knew something was up. The press never left Lottie alone. Whether it was about her sexuality or her career. Lottie commented on the hate and comparison she received. I've been in the press for such a long time, I stopped caring. I'm so used to it, unlike people who have become famous so much later in their lives. I've never really let it get to me because I was so used to it. For the future, she wishes to use the OnlyFans platform to make more people comfortable with their own body and open to exploration. 10 quick cues with Lottie Moss. Number 1, if your personality was a type of alcohol, What would it be? Tequila. What does your self-care day look like? Tequila and a face mask. Favorite fashion trend? Crocs and nothing else. Just Crocs. What trend should ever be recovered? Men, I think their time is over. Biggest red flag in a relationship? Being shady with his phone. Logic or emotions? Emotions. Favorite TV show at the moment? 90210. Any favorite underrated brands that more people should know? CSD World. It's a place where you get great pre-owned clothes. Also Gucci. I feel like people really don't know about it. Biggest pet peeve. People that are late and people that walk slowly. Which Disney princess is your favorite? Me. Keeping up with Lottie. Be sure to keep up with Lottie on Instagram at LottieMossXO and TikTok at LottieMossX. This article is written by Jenny Rong. She is an editor for The Teen Magazine. She is a senior from Hong Kong who studies in New York, and she loves to advocate for marginalized groups through writing. She enjoys spending time finding new music, painting, and binge-watching Netflix. The next article is titled, "The glass ceiling may not look the same, but it definitely hasn't cracked." With the recent appointment of Lena Nair as the CEO of celebrated fashion house Chanel, discussions surrounding intersectionality and women's upward mobility have resurfaced. Nair's appointment of the CEO position not only marks her amongst a select few women who are heading up couture brands, but also amongst a small roster of women of color who've been able to progress to higher level executive jobs in general. In modern society, the glass ceiling that to a large extent prevents the upward mobility of women has become a criticized but accepted facet of industry and management. In the upper echelon of Wall Street private equity firms, women comprise only 9% of executive positions and only comprise about a fifth of the general workforce, according to a 2017 report by Preqin. There's been a consistent debate about why women are functionally pushed out of higher up positions and what that has to say about modern management and gender equality. Gender inequality is not exclusive to the finance industry, particularly for students hoping to go into public health and executive hospital professions. Considering medicine is a female-dominated industry, they may still struggle to achieve those executive positions. The gender gap present in administrative roles fosters a one-dimensional approach to health and commerce that results in women being overlooked by policy and effectively told to stay in their place. Women in leadership positions are backseat drivers in policy making. Global health leadership, being primarily male-dominated, furthers the fact that women in multiple fields, even if a majority of students and educators in the field are women, are denied advancement and growth because of inherent gender biases. Especially during coronavirus, estimated demographics show that an inordinate 51.8% of hospitals identified as, as 51.8% of hospitalists identified as female. Without professional growth as a prospect, women contribute the same, if not more, to active community health, but aren't compensated the same. Medscape asserted that male hospitalists are afforded a 30% higher compensation than their female counterparts. Emerging global health organizations also don't have women at their helm. The World Health Organization's director office has 3 women out of the total of 10 committee members. In the finance sector, women only make up about 20% globally on executive committees of upper crust companies. Only 41 CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women, and the only 2 black women on the roster contributed to a grand total of 3 to ever make the list. Even a female-dominated industry like fashion, where consumers are often drawn in by influencers such as Gigi Hadid and Kendall Jenner, doesn't even afford women the opportunity to spearhead commerce and operations. Nair's appointment and the outburst of support in favor of her position shows that this isn't a normal occurrence, which presents a big issue when it comes to representation across the board. The United States is one of a select few countries that doesn't provide paid maternity leave. The maintenance of the glass ceiling and the lack of female mobility in administrative roles are often associated with the role the woman plays in the family. The United States Congress recently tanked a bill that would have given burgeoning families 12 weeks of paid maternity leave, an amount that already pales in comparison to global competitors like France and the UK. The proposal was cut down to 4 and is still up for debate in office. Social welfare would inherently benefit by giving more women the opportunity to work in the workforce, and that requires there to be a better maternity leave policy that allows women to maintain higher level positions without suffering through post-pregnancy care and denied a steady income. Affordable childcare for women looking for government-funded maternity leave is important to keep women in the workforce. Otherwise, you're fostering the development of a broken pipeline that streams women out after they want to settle down. Sexual and reproductive health of women is a criminally underfunded cause. In many developing countries, the coronavirus pandemic contributed to an increase in violence against women and increased disparities in nutrition and reproductive health. In India, the pandemic-induced lockdown resulted in difficulties getting swift reproductive and pregnancy aid, resulting in over 1.3 million women losing access to abortion and sexual health resources, according to the MSI Reproductive Choices. Treatment and consultations for pregnancies were stalled as many states halted public health affairs, resulting in a high toll morally and physically. Sorry about that. In Saudi Arabia, multiple health policy laws implemented strip women of their autonomy. In 2008, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women revealed that under law, women needed a male's approval before any medical treatment was to be performed. With the U.S. withdrawing from Afghanistan, a decrease in maternal mortality rate has suddenly reached an uptick, and basic health care that should be afforded to women and girls is no longer available because of a lack of funding. Prenatal and postnatal care, breast and ovarian cancer, and preventative care measures like pap smears are difficult to assess. The abortion debate in the United States also uniquely supports the commodification of a woman's body. Doctors Without Borders reports that unsafe abortions are a leading cause of maternal mortality, and that as abortion restrictions increase, there's a higher likelihood of unsafe procedures occurring. While these issues are larger scale issues in developing countries, states implementing policy against Roe v. Wade is causing an increase in unsafe pregnancy complications in the United States. Women's rights is still a fight. In the modern developed world, it's easy to forget about the lasting impacts of traditional gender inequality. In many cultures, and to a large extent in American culture, the female is still relegated and expected to manage the expressive task of the household. Sexualization and objectification also foster that sense of female degradation, resulting in many women losing their stature and being delegitimized as people and academics. The easiest way to increase healthcare accessibility and female socioeconomic mobility? To allow more women to enter the workforce at higher levels and foster female achievement. It shouldn't be a celebration when a woman of color is placed on the helm of one of the top companies in the world. It shouldn't be revolutionary when a woman is afforded basic health care. It should be normal. The future is female. This article was written by Raya Jayanthi. Raya Jayanthi is a freshman in college from Atlanta, Georgia, who loves acai bowls? I think it's acai bowls. The Saints and a good guitar riff. The next article is titled, Why Transgender Athletes Should Be Allowed to Participate in Sports. The issue of transgender athletes participating in sports has long been viewed as an issue affected by culture and politics instead of science. Many people are divided on their opinions on this issue, and some may even choose extreme stances. Identity politics play a huge part in this issue. Having said that, I would like to suggest a more moderate solution to this debate. This article will primarily focus on the participation of transgender women in sports because there is already an ingrained and deep-seated belief that they have advantages over cisgender athletes as compared to transgender men. Gap in strength of biological males and biological females. The gap between the strength of an average cisgender woman and that of an average cisgender man becomes apparent at puberty. This gap comes to around 10 to 50%, depending on how frequently each muscle is used, how frequently which muscles are used, and which sports a person participates in. Most transgender people transition after puberty and then undergo feminizing hormone therapy. Hormone therapy includes testosterone blockers and estrogen for transgender women to decrease testosterone levels and produce feminine or masculine secondary sex characteristics to stimulate puberty. Most transgender people possess the same testosterone levels as cisgender people of the same gender as them. 5% of cisgender women have testosterone below 2 nanomoles per liter. In a recent research study of 250 non-athletic trans women, 94% of them had testosterone levels below 2 nanomoles per liter. This was much lower than the cutoff standard in most major sports federations. We must consider that, although there is a cutoff standard, different methods of testing will return different results. The IOC rule uses immunoassay testing, while World Athlete uses liquid chromatography mass spectrometry. To make sense of the units, 10 nanomoles by immunoassay test is equivalent to 7.5 nanomoles by liquid chromatography mass spectrometry, or LCMS. Transgender women maintain higher strength levels. With or without hormone therapy, transgender women still maintain higher strength levels than cisgender women. However, strength is only one of the few key factors that affect athletic performance. These factors include lean body mass, explosiveness, and endurance, and depending on the sport, other critical skills like hand-eye coordination or flexibility. The greater strength proportion of transgender women must be put into perspective. Even for sports like weightlifting that involve mostly strength, endurance is also a key factor. For running, transgender women have faster speeds than cisgender women without hormone therapy. After 2 years of hormone therapy, the gap is narrowed down to 12% faster in speed. However, this difference is negligible for athletes. To be an elite runner, an athlete must be at least 29% faster than the average person. The 12% does not pose much of an injustice to athletes. Endurance levels of transgender women are affected. Besides strength, endurance levels are also affected by hormone therapy. During hormone therapy, testosterone is either decreased or increased based on gender, which also leads to a decrease or increase in hemoglobin levels. The hemoglobin level of transgender people is no higher than that of cisgender people. A review of 24 studies conducted on transgender women found that testosterone suppressants reduce hemoglobin levels in transgender women to that of cisgender women. Hemoglobin production is a major influence on the endurance level of a person. Since transgender women do not have higher hemoglobin levels than cisgender women, there is no advantage in the area of endurance. Endurance is as important as strength while competing in a sport. While transgender women may have higher strength, they do not have higher endurance. Skills like flexibility or hand-eye coordination are not affected by strength or endurance. Hormone therapy and biological sex do not affect these abilities, and thus transgender women do not have advantages in them either. Significant decrease in lean body mass. Some biological males have a larger body frame than women. That includes transgender women who have not yet undergone hormone therapy. Some biological males also have higher lean body mass. This will affect sports like weightlifting or boxing, where the size and weight of a competitor is a significant detail in performance. On the other hand, transgender women who have undergone hormone therapy have only slightly higher lean body mass than cisgender women. Considering that their muscle mass decreases, the size of their body may also be reduced slightly. Some transgender women may also have a smaller body frame from birth already. Numerous studies have reported a significant decrease in the lean body mass of transgender women undergoing hormone therapy. Furthermore, these sports often have weight classes which match competitors against others of the same size. Even though some transgender women athletes may have a slightly heavier body mass or larger body frame than average cisgender women, they will still be evenly matched against women in the same weight category. Laura Hubbard in the Olympics. For an example of such transgender athletes, we should look to New Zealand's Laurel Hubbard, who competed in the Tokyo 2021 Olympics. At the time, Hubbard weighed 130 kilograms, while China's Li Wenwen weighed 150 kilograms, a whole 20 kilograms more than Hubbard. Clearly, not all transgender women athletes weigh more than their cisgender counterparts. In addition, Hubbard lost to Li Wenwen, showing that transgender athletes do not necessarily have an advantage. Although Hubbard lost, she is a pioneer for transgender athletes around the world by being the first openly transgender woman to compete in the Olympics. Disadvantages in certain areas. Trans women have even faced certain disadvantages. Some transgender women with larger body frames may have reduced muscle mass and aerobic capacity after hormone therapy. Their quickness and recovery speed may be slower than usual. As Joanna Harper puts it, it's like a big car with a small engine competing against a small car with a small engine. Harper is a sports physicist who has advised the International Olympic Committee, IOC, and other sporting bodies on gender and sports. The idea that transgender women only have advantages is wrong. Safety concerns. Despite having weight classes in certain sports, in other sports, like rugby, the safety of competitors may remain a concern. If an athlete with higher body mass tackles an athlete with lower body mass, they may both be severely injured. In this case, individual rules are needed. Every sport has a different technique and different playing styles. Every sport also has different rules. Injuries caused by falls can be common in contact sports like basketball, but are not common in other sports like archery. Rules on transgender athletes must be adapted to fit the playing style of the sport. For sports like archery or swimming, perhaps not many changes to the rules are required, but for safety's sake, changes to the rules like for sports like rugby are needed. One good suggestion brought up to the World Rugby before is that a limit of one transgender woman per team be put on the teams. The International Federation of Sports Medicine, IFSM, which represents 125,000 physicians in 117 countries, has said that none of the latest research supports a blanket ban on transgender athletes competing in sports. Nonetheless, experts agree that each sport needs their own rules on transgender athletes competing. To quote Blair Hamilton, "I've played women's sports now for 4 years. I'm not dominating the sport." Hamilton is a transgender woman who researches trans athletes at Britain's Brighton University and plays in the seventh tier of British women's football. "We do not leave them out of competition because they do not breach the adage of meaningful competition. Likewise, we should not leave transgender women out of sports without a good reason to do so. Instead, we should opt for an unbiased view of this issue and evaluate the solutions according to science." This article is by Kang Lu B, who is a poet and writer from Singapore. We've come to the end of today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.